And the title of my sermon's The Four Seasons of a Christian, which would be spring, summer, autumn, and winter. And, I had a book about this once, and I thought it was interesting. Now, there's a very famous piece of music, I may start coughing here, but I'm not contagious, called The Four Seasons by Antonio Vivaldi. Now, if you know anything about classical music or not, he was born in the 1700s, and the piece of music's really famous. It's about 40 minutes long, and he was the court church master in a place in Italy. So he's pretty famous. If you know anything about classical music, you would know him. But, you know, I've thought about this a lot. One thing I love about, and you see it in this part of the country. You didn't see it in Florida at all. You saw it a lot in, like, Tennessee, Kentucky, and that are four seasons. You know, like in Florida, it's just one long season. It just never seems to end. Now, the summers here are rather long and rather, shall we say, not really great, but hey, just be glad we have seasons. Just be glad we've got weather. But I believe the four seasons of the year are similar to the seasons in the life of a Christian. You know, and I think we can break this down. I mean, any analogy always breaks down to some degree. But I think you can. I think everybody in this room can think about these four seasons in their life of a Christian when you think about it. And I thought I'd read a couple of verses over in 1 Timothy, the first verse, where Timothy was talking. Now, I gave a sermon about being a Christian soldier, and I think I may have even read this verse, if I'm not mistaken. But over in 1 Timothy chapter 1, this, of course, is a letter from Paul. Paul was telling Timothy, who was a younger minister, who knows how old he was, but he was not, you know, he was not what you call a seasoned, long-term minister. And in chapter 1 of 1 Timothy, verse 18, 19, and 20, Paul says, this charge, it says charge, or this, you know, he was trying to get something across to Timothy. He says, I commit to you, son Timothy. So he thought of Timothy as his son, although he wasn't his physical son. And he said that I want you to wage the good warfare. Now, like I said, I gave a sermon about being a Christian soldier. But he told Timothy, have faith and have a good conscience, which some have rejected. What have they rejected? They've rejected their conscience over the years. You know, I've seen this so many times. It's sad, but it's a certain situation that's not good. Now, so he's telling Timothy to fight the good fight of being a Christian soldier. But over in 2 Timothy, he mentioned something else to Timothy, similar. And 2 Timothy was written probably a very short time before Paul died, because he was martyred. We don't know for sure. We think he was probably martyred by Nero, but yet we can't be certain. Put some water here. But verse 1, 2 Timothy chapter 2, therefore, my son, he calls Timothy a son again, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus, that the things that you've heard from me. So Paul had taught Timothy. You know, he'd been there, met Timothy where he lived and talked and quite frankly ordained Timothy, an elder. And he told Timothy to commit these things. What things? The things that Paul had taught Timothy to faithful men who will be able to teach others. So therefore, you must endure hardship as a good soldier. So he's telling Timothy to be serious about his job. Now, dropping down to verse 14 of the same chapter, 2 Timothy 2, says, remind them of these things, charging them that before the Lord, not to strive about words to no profit to the ruin of the hearers. You know, we can just get so caught up in little things. But yet, the Bible's quite clear. You know, there's a lot of gray areas in life, but there's a lot of black and white areas in life. And quite frankly, that's what we need to focus on, the black and white, because sometimes people take the black and white areas that are very clear and try to make them gray areas, but they're really not. The Bible's clear on things like that. So he told Timothy in verse 15 to be diligent to present yourself approved to God. You know, be serious. And if we're a Christian, what he's telling you and I, we need to be serious about our calling. This is not some real frivolous thing that we see people make so many things in life. So it says, be diligent. Present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Then he tells him how to avoid just vain babblings that you hear. Now, I remember in high school, when I first started hearing about the Church of God, I was probably about 15 years old. Now, when Randy D'Alessandro died, who was a pastor up in Chicago, and he was up in Detroit before that, and I knew Randy, and he had a funeral service, a memorial service, one Sunday a couple weeks ago, and it was online, so I went in and watched it, and his wife was talking about some things about Randy that I knew him well, and I didn't know this, but she was mentioning about how when he first heard about the truth from the Bible, he was 15 years old, and he was turning his radio trying to find a Detroit Tiger baseball game, and somehow he came across the World Tomorrow broadcast. Well, it's sort of interesting because I had a similar situation. I think I was 15. Never really knew this. I wrote his wife and told her, you know, with all the stuff going on, I just, you know, something to me I thought was interesting to me. But, you know, and I used to listen to the radio when I was a kid, and I'd listen to all these baseball games. And I even know the channel that she had talked about. It had been WJR in Detroit. But I think it's around 740 or somewhere in the 700s. But when I would listen to the radio, I started listening to a lot of the religious programs. I remember listening to Billy Graham and a couple others. But I came across The World Tomorrow and became very interested. And I wrote in for literature and so forth. And I could see this was different than what I'd been taught when I grew up in a Protestant church. And, you know, my parents, we always went to church, the Protestant church I went to. But it's a lot of stuff I never really, never entered my mind, for instance, that the Fourth Commandment says the Sabbath is Friday sunset to Saturday sunset. Never entered my mind until I started listening. And I started, as I was listening to all these religious programs, some of them I'd write in. They'd send me these little tracts to pass out. And again, I ordered these, and I remember I had them, not, of course, from The World Tomorrow, but whatever the ones. And I remember going down to downtown Nashville. Now, downtown Nashville was pretty large to me, but nothing like it is now. And I take these tracks, little two or three page things. I was supposed to pass them out to people. And I'd go down there and maybe God was just trying to help me, but I just felt so uncomfortable doing it. Although I was told this is what you're supposed to do. And what's interesting, I never once handed one out. I'm down there with all these things and I would see these people and I just never really handed one out because I would feel nervous. Then I came to studying more about the truth of God. It was both exciting and it was humbling. But I wanted others to see this truth, but when others didn't see it, you know, it seemed perplexing. So I started attending church down in New Orleans, because I had the minister come out. It's a long story there. But he invited me to church, and I started attending church. And I began counseling for baptism. Now, I think I started attending church in the summer, but I was actually baptized the April of the following year, right before Passover. So I began my life as a Christian. And my life as a Christian, and your life when you began to become a Christian, if you're a Christian, your first stage, you could call it the spring of your Christian life. And again, every analogy breaks down to some degree, but I think this all fits together. And today I was going to cover spring and summer, and then on the probably review a little bit briefly on the 27th, God willing, and then take a look at fall, winter, or autumn, winter. But what is the spring time in the life of a Christian? And I've called that learning to wait on the kingdom. Springtime, learning to wait on the kingdom. So, you know, the springtime of being a Christian is a time of great enthusiasm. It's a wonderful time, enthusiasm. I remember I was in this one church area. It wasn't New Orleans. I was visiting somewhere, and I was all excited. And this one man told me, he said, "Well, if you've been around, you won't be so excited." And obviously he was not too excited because he quit attending and really went back. In fact, Penny probably, well, his wife, let's just put it this way, his former wife, he left her, we knew in Florida. We visited her a few times. But she was still attending. But the springtime, learning to wait on the kingdom. Now, glad we have water. Let's take a look at John chapter 6. John chapter 6. If you've been a Christian for a long time, you can think back at when you started attending, when you started hearing the truth, when you first were baptized. And in John chapter 6, though, something we all need to remember, but yet sometimes we don't clearly see it. But in verse 44, Jesus Christ said this of chapter 6 of John, "No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him or her." We have to be called. Now, probably have given a sermon, I don't know if I have or not here, on calling. And it's something God has to call us. And when God calls, you know, I could go, I'm not going to, but I'd go to the parable of the sower, where different stages and different people reject it or kind of get excited, and then they quit worrying about it, or then they get excited, and then the cares of the world. Then others just stay the course. That what God is looking for is to stay the course. You know, I sent a couple cards to Barbara Martin, Ken Martin's, who died, his wife, and she sent me a message the other day and said how, what I remember, she said, "I'm doing okay, but I'm not doing okay." And, you know, I can understand that. Ken and Barbara Martin are two of the finest people I think I've ever met. Penny, I mean, they're wonderful. But she doesn't have Ken anymore. But Ken's run his race, you know. But, you know, how people sometimes, they'll say things, and Barbara Martin didn't tell me this, but somebody else was telling me recently. They'll say things, "Well, don't worry, you'll see him again." That's easy to say, isn't it? Is if you're not the person that's in mourning, if you're not the person that's having to deal with losing a mate that you've known for years. but at funerals and memorial service, sometimes people say the oddest things. And I know we've been, when family members have died, people sometimes have said things like, "Why do you say that? You didn't even make sense." But nobody can come to God. God has to open our minds. And I have to go back and look at all the different religious types of religions and various things of so-called Christianity as I grew up. But yet none of them at all taught what I came to see from the Bible when God opened my mind. Not that I'm any smarter than the next person, not near as smart as some. But God, I know He opened my mind to things. And when you become a Christian, God opens your mind to what the Bible really says. Not that we know every little nuance and every little tiny detail. And there's a lot of things we just have to wait and see. But yet the basic doctrines of Christianity are clear when you go to the Bible. And He said, I'm going to raise that person up at the last day. Now, here was Christ going around preaching, and he had disciples. Most of them left Him over time, but He had the 12 apostles. And notice over in Luke chapter 9, I think this is a good example of James and John, two very sincere people. Now, John is the one that wrote the Gospel of John, the one that wrote 1st and 2nd and 3rd John and Revelation. But James did not write any New Testament book because the letter of James was the brother of Jesus Christ that was born to Mary after Christ was born of a virgin. But James, how do we know what happened to James? He was the first apostle that we know of that died, that was martyred. I think it's Acts 12 where Herod killed him. That was John's brother. But here's James and John in chapter 9 of Luke. And verse 51, they're going through a Samaritan village. There's James and Jesus and the other disciples. And it came to pass when the time had come for him to be received up. So this was getting close to the time where it was about time that Christ, late in His ministry, before He was crucified, He steadfastly set His face to go to Jerusalem. Jesus Christ knew what was going to happen when He went to Jerusalem, and He was heading there, and He sent messengers before Him, and as they went, they entered a village of the Samaritans to prepare for Him. Now, the Samaritans and the Jews did not get along. And Samaritans actually believe the first five books of the Old Testament, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, but they didn't believe a lot of the other. So these Samaritans, they didn't receive Him because His face was set for the journey to Jerusalem. In other words, they didn't like the Jews. Now, when His disciples, James and John, who were brothers, when they saw how the Samaritans were treating Jesus and them too, they said, Lord, do You want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, just like Elijah did? And Elijah did that in 1 Kings 1. And He turned and He rebuked them and said, you don't know what manner of spirit you're of. For the Son of Man, which was Him, didn't come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And what did He do? He just then went to another village. He wasn't there to destroy the Samaritans. He was there to open the mind. In fact, I think it's John 3 where you can read about when He met the Samaritan woman and went and preached to the Samaritans. Now, James and John were something. In fact, I'm not going to turn there, but I'll give you a reference. Mark 3:17. Jesus called James and John the sons of thunder, meaning they were quite boisterous, I guess you could say. But when we read in John seems like he talks so much about love, doesn't he? And so much, but yet initially in the early time of their life with Jesus Christ, of course, then after Christ died, then the Holy Spirit came. But they were pretty strong. Now, I remember the first Feast of Tabernacles I ever went to. seems like forever ago, 1973. I was attending church in New Orleans, and there were two other young men that were also single that went to the feast with me. They rode with me. And one had a grandmother in the church. The other one was living at home with his parents, and they strongly disliked the church of God that he was attending. So we drove to St. Petersburg, Florida. Now, the place where used to have the Feast of Tabernacles in St. Petersburg, it doesn't even exist anymore. The building's gone. And it was right on the near the ocean, is right where the St. Petersburg baseball team was that have spring training there. One of the major league teams, I can't remember which. But there was over 10,000 people in attendance at the Feast of Tabernacles in St. Petersburg, the first one I ever went to. Now, on the way to the feast, I probably told this story before, but on the way to the feast, we stopped to eat. And I ordered something, and it happened to have beans in it. Again, if I've told this before, should probably have. Just bear with me. But it had beans, so one of the men told me, you may want to check those beans out. They could possibly be cooked in lard. And I was a stubborn, and I said, no, they're fine. See, look at them. They look just fine, which they looked okay. And I wasn't going to eat anything with ham or bacon, but I said, no, they're fine. He said, no. And the others, no, you need to check this out. And being stubborn, I just really wouldn't. I just kind of dug my heels in, my spring time of Christianity, I guess you could call it. And one of them, he went all the way back to the back to ask the cook whether these beans had lard or ham or whatever, and they did. Now, so, you know, it wasn't that I wanted to eat ham or lard. So then I got a big lecture from the two about how, you know, when you've been in the church a while, you'll understand these things. Did they handle it well? They didn't, and I didn't either. But when we got to the feast, they kept talking about they're going to buy the biggest steak, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. So when we got to the Feast of Tabernacles, they were living like kings for the first two or three days. Problem is they spent all their second tithe. And then they went to the minister and wanted more second tithe, and he wouldn't give it to them. So then I get to hear about how mean the minister was, like I get to hear about myself sometimes. I'm a mean person. Not here, but other places have called me mean. And I'm not really sure. I never really thought I was mean. But you know what? It is what it is. But you know, this was my early stage of being a Christian. First Feast of Tabernacles I ever went to. Now, I'll mention these two boys, or two young men, they both quit attending. One of them quit attending soon after the feast, and the other quit attending. So they didn't have things all together either, let's just put it that way. Now, I think over in Luke 23, Luke chapter 23, the springtime, which is like springtime of being a Christian. What did I call that? I said learning to wait on the kingdom, not wanting everything done right the way you want it immediately. Because don't you wish Jesus Christ would just come back tomorrow? In fact, I'll even say, why can't he come back during the sermon? I'd be very happy to stop speaking. But don't think he's going to yet, but he will the proper time. But over in Luke 23, verse 33 and 34, notice this is when he was crucified. When they came to the place called Calvary, they crucified him, a criminal on one right hand, the other on the left, and Jesus said, Father, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. I mean, wouldn't there be every reason for him to be angry? If he was, the fact that he was God, he knew He knew his father. He knew what he was sent to earth to do. But yet, what was Christ sent to earth for? Well, over in John chapter 1, you know, if you just read the first chapter of John, the Gospel of John, it tells you a whole lot about Christianity, and it tells you a whole lot about Jesus Christ in that one chapter. But I thought I would read the first five verses of John 1, because it says, "In the beginning was the Word." The Greek word is logos, but the Word, who was the Word? Well, it's clear that it was Jesus Christ. Because notice, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. So say, oh, that's got to be the Father. No, it says, and the Word was, well, it says, the Word was with God. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. So aren't there two? Aren't there two? He was in the beginning with God. So Jesus Christ, the Word, and the Father were together in the beginning. All things were made through him. Through who? Through the Word, Jesus Christ. People get that all confused sometimes. And without him, nothing was made that was made. It's telling you a lot right here about who was Jesus Christ. In him was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shines in the darkness, but the darkness didn't comprehend it. You know, mankind didn't realize here was God, a God being, the Word, Jesus Christ. So enthusiasm is a good thing. You know, learn to wait on the kingdom. Enthusiasm is a good thing, but it needs to be mixed with patience and wisdom. It needs to be, you know, virtually most of the time when somebody starts attending church, our church, they one of the first things they ask me is they want to be baptized. And I'll say, look, that's a great thing, but learn the Bible first. Learn why you want to be baptized. Because baptism is a serious issue. Now, I've got some folks in one of my congregations, Fort Worth, I know three people that I think are about ready for baptism. But I'm trying to put people off that I don't want to baptize people, but I want them to know why they want to be baptized. I want them to become grounded, understand the Bible first. You don't just go, jump around from one church to the next and want to be baptized. I had a man that was really kept asking me, and I was... And a lot of times they get upset and they quit attending because you won't do what they want you to do. And I got a phone call back when I was sick from a lady in Florida that said, "Now, you know me," which I kind of halfway remember, "I need to be baptized now." And I thought, I haven't been your pastor in 3 years. Then she realized that, and she went to the pastor. But so, you know, some of the things that are come up. Nobody is trying to keep people from being baptized, but you want them to understand why they're being baptized, and if there's certain things that we need to learn to fight to change, you shouldn't be baptized until you're ready to try to conquer that issue. Now, one other scripture here in this springtime, first stage of being a Christian, is over in James chapter 3. James chapter 3. Now, this is James, the brother of Jesus Christ. Not James the apostle, but James, the brother of Jesus Christ. So I can go back and show you didn't even believe in him back when Christ, Jesus, was on the earth preaching. But then afterwards, after the resurrection, he began to change. But in chapter 3 of James, verse 1 and 2, for this, that first stage of being a Christian, learning to wait on the kingdom, not saying it's got to be here now. We've got to get everything done immediately. My brethren, not let many of you become teachers, knowing that we, if we're a teacher, will receive a stricter judgment. So, look at myself. I am so far from perfect, the words don't even seem to fit together because I'm so unperfect. But yet I know if I'm a teacher, in my case an elder, I'd better take this serious because God's judging me for what I say and what I do and the responsibility. But then James says, we all of us stumble in many ways. If anyone doesn't stumble in word, he's a perfect, I think that word's mature, but it's almost perfect man or woman, able to bridle the whole body. Nobody is perfect. Nobody's able to bridle their whole body. But the springtime of the life of a Christian, time of learning to wait on the kingdom, the spring of our conversion is an exciting time, but it's only the beginning of your and my life as a Christian. Now I want to cover a second season, as you call it, of a Christian, and that's called summer. Now, when we had the COVID, they told us to try to get up and walk. And so we would try to walk. We'd go outside and walk, but we couldn't walk too far. I mean, seriously, it was a pretty pathetic little walk. It's like, oh, man, I'm tired. And I really didn't even want to walk. I just wanted to lay on that sofa, which I still do. So I'm looking forward to laying on it tonight. But, yeah, I've been sleeping on the sofa. Penny's been sleeping in the bed. That way we don't disturb each other. But that has nothing to do with anything except, man, I'm looking forward to that sofa tonight. Somehow I can sleep better on that sofa. But the summer is finding the strength to serve. Second phase of being a Christian as far as the seasons. The first one's learn to wait on the kingdom. The second is finding the strength to serve. Find the strength to serve. When we, not even sure why I brought that up about the walking, but I guess I was thinking, man, I'm glad the weather's kind of cool. Right now we've kind of increased our how far we can walk, but it's good to just get out and do things. Let's look at Mark chapter 6 on this point of finding the strength to serve. So over in Mark 6, read a few verses here. Look at verse 30. Now what happened? Here's the example of Jesus feeding the 5,000. What happened just before he fed the 5,000? Well, what happened was John the Baptist was beheaded. And then they came and told Jesus. And of course, that was a very emotional time. That John the Baptist, his friend, was beheaded. But here, right after that, Jesus said, he was God, but he was like, he wasn't going to let that stop him. He still had to find the strength to serve. And then the apostles gathered to Jesus, told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. They had been out teaching. And he said, come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they didn't even have time to eat. So there's a lot going on at this particular time. So they departed to the deserted place in a boat by themselves. But the multitude saw them departing, and he was very popular because he was healing all these people. And he was obviously the greatest speaker ever. He'd have to be. He's God. And many knew him. They ran on foot from all the cities. They arrived before them and came together to him. Jesus, when he came out of the boat, I suppose, he saw this great multitude And he was moved with compassion for them because they're like sheep not having a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. And when the day was now far spent, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place, and the hour's late. Send them away." The disciples said, "Send these people. They're just everywhere. Send them away." That they may go to the surrounding country and villages and buy themselves food. Because they have nothing to eat. But he, Jesus, answered them and said, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "Well," one of them said, "Should we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give them something to eat? We don't have this kind of food or money." And he said, "How many loaves do you have?" And they said, "Well, they found 5, 2 little fish." Then he commanded them to make them all sit down in the groups in the green grass. They sat down in ranks in hundreds and fifties. When he had taken the 5 loaves, the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven. He blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples to set before them. And the 2 fish he divided among them. They all ate, they were filled. Then they took up 12 baskets full of fragments and of the fish. Here's the interesting verse, 44. "And now they who had eaten the loaves were about 5,000 men, in addition to women and children." But at this particular time, they've been preaching to them, teaching them all day. Remember, the disciples said, "Send them away." Now, wouldn't it be easy for you and me to say, "I'm tired"? Do you ever feel that way in your life? Of course you do. We all do at times. "Send them away," is what the disciples said to Jesus. Do you ever want to just rest and be left alone? Of course you do at times. Because life is hard at times. It's a struggle at times. Because we fight our own weaknesses and the weaknesses of others. And, you know, I know a man who lived in Rome, Georgia. Still attends church in Rome, Georgia. But he used to drive on weeknights, I think twice a month, all the way to Birmingham, which is a 2.5-hour drive, just where he'd go to Spokesman's Club. Now, we're so small, it's hard to have Spokesman's Club. But, you know, so small, it's just not that many people. But yet, I found that even the larger congregations, of which they're not that large, but, you know, you get tired. And this particular man, he was telling me how he would drive 2.5 hours to Spokesman's Club in Birmingham on weeknights. And quite frankly, it had to be tiring when he did that. Think about YOU activities back when we were, you know, years ago. We would drive hours. You would drive hours. You would work at concession stands just to be part of the group. In one church area, I remember there was an associate pastor. Yeah, I remember this so well. Years ago, he was an associate pastor. Let us leave it at that. He died in the faith. But he actually was told by the pastor that he had to play on, we had this men's basketball tournament. And I was in Nashville then. We had to drive to Chattanooga, which is about a little over a 2-hour drive. But Nashville is on Central Time Zone. Chattanooga is on Eastern Time Zone, so there's another hour. And he was told he had to play on this, on the Murfreesboro team, men's team. And they were playing Chattanooga, who had 2 teams. The Chattanooga A team was always the best team in our region. Nashville was okay, but I was on the Nashville B team, and Murfreesboro, they didn't have a real good team. But this particular man, the associate pastor, they had them scheduled at 8 a.m. in the morning, which would be 7 a.m. Nashville time. Think about it, 2-plus-hour drive. So who knows what time they had to get up. But I remember getting there because we didn't play. I think we played at 9:30, so we had a good deal. But I remember getting there, and it was halftime, and he came up to me and he said, I had to get up at, 3:30 or for this. And he pointed up to the scoreboard. It was halftime, and it was some score like 45-4, something like that. Well, he wasn't on the 45 end. Now, he didn't say that because he was mad. He said that because it was like he laughed about it. Think of how you get tired. You get tired. And that's even in the summer of the life of a Christian. Send them away. I just want to rest, is how you feel sometimes. How you feel sometimes. Now, over in Mark again, let's look at Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5, verse 21. Now, when Jesus had crossed over again by boat to the other side of the water, a great multitude gathered to him. He was by the sea. One of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, when he saw him, he fell at his feet and begged him earnestly, my little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her and she may be healed and she'll live. Well, Jesus had to be tired because he was physical even though he's God in the flesh. And Jesus went with him. And a great multitude followed him and thronged him. You know, you see all these entertainers and movie stars and whatever the case may be, they tend to take uppers and downers and all these things to try to keep going. But of course, Jesus wouldn't do this, but Jesus had to get tired. So they followed him. And a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years. She had suffered many things from the many physicians. She spent all that she had and she wasn't any better, but really she was getting worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came behind him, the crowd, and just touched his garment. Because she said, if only I can touch his clothes, I'll be made well. And immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up. She felt in her body she was healed. Jesus immediately, knowing in himself that power had gone out of him. Don't ask me how he knew, but he did. He turned around in the crowd and said, who touched my clothes? Well, she was, you know, the disciples looked at him and said, you see all these multitudes, all these people thronging you. How do you say, who touched me? And he looked around to see her who had done this thing. And how did he treat her? The woman was fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her. She came and fell down before him and told him the truth. He said, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. You know, soon after this, like I said, we read about the 5,000 kept to his task. Mark 8, I'm not going to read there, but then he feeds 4,000. In fact, let's turn to Mark 8, because even after he did this, and, you know, if you were God, which we're not, we want to be in the family of God someday, but can you imagine how he had to get so frustrated with human beings, but yet somehow he took it all in. Mark 8, verse 10, immediately got in the boat with his disciples and came to the region of Dalmatia, which was after he fed the 4,000. Not the 5,000, but the 4,000. The Pharisees came out. They began to dispute with him. They wanted to see a sign from heaven testing him. He sighed deeply in his spirit. He had to think, what in the world am I doing with these people? Why does this generation seek a sign, he said? Assuredly, I say to you, no sign shall be given to this generation. Now, in another place, he says, 3 days and three nights in the grave. And he left them, and he got into the boat, and he departed to the other side. Now, the disciples had forgotten to take bread. They didn't have more than one loaf with them in the boat. The disciples seemed to always not have enough bread. It's kind of interesting. Then he charged them, said, take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the leaven of Herod. So they reasoned among themselves, this must be because we have no bread. That's not what he was talking about. He said, what do you reason you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive nor understand? Is your heart still hardened? He had just fed all these people. He just healed all these people. He just done all these things, yet they still didn't get it. Having ears, do you not see? Or having eyes, do you not see? Having ears, do you not hear? Don't you remember when I broke the five loaves for the 5,000? How many baskets full of fragments did you take up? And they said, 12. When I broke the seven for the 4,000, how many baskets did you take up? And they said, 7. And he said to them, how is it that you don't understand? Being a Christian means you get tired in the summer heat of your life, even though you're converted. It's easy to say, send them away. I just want to rest. Now, just a little sidelight here. Johann Sebastian Bach was one of the great musicians of all time. He wrote hundreds, possibly even thousands of musical pieces. And he was the musician to the emperor. Now, much of what he wrote has been lost. And one of the reasons it's been lost, he would write his music actually on paper that would be used to wrap meat and fish, and then they would pack it in ice. He would write this, and then these, whatever he wrote, not always, but lots of times, and then they'd put these fish in meat. He would pack that in ice, and of course, then it just, over time, got thrown away. But a lot of them didn't get lost. Many did, not all. But one thing he did, you can go back and read about his life, he dedicated most of his music, both the sacred music that he considered sacred and secular, he would dedicate it to God. And on almost all the manuscripts, he would put two sets of initials that would identify it was him. At the beginning, he would write the letters JJ, and at the end, he would write the letter SDG. Now, JJ stood for Jesus Help Me. Now, the actual word is Jesus Yvette, Jesus Help Me. And the SDG that would be at the end of any of his compositions stood for Sol Dea Gloria, which meant God alone be the glory. We could do worse than assign these words to our everyday life. At the beginning of the day, Jesus help me. At the end of the day, to God be the glory. There was a hospital in Chattanooga, I used to call it Memorial Hospital, one of the elevators. It wasn't one of the main elevators, but it was one of the elevators. Right above, they had a little plaque. It wasn't very large, but it just said, if you thank God for life today, and we could do a lot worse than each day, just thanking God for life. So if we've entered the summer, you know, the spring of our life, we're in the way to the kingdom, and the summer of our Christian life, which of course is finding the strength to serve. It is so easy to say we're tired. So easy to say, send them away, just leave me alone. And yes, we do need, if we've not already done so, to learn to pace ourselves. But this doesn't mean it's time to send them away, so to speak. It's time to push forward and realize what the life of a Christian he is. You have this big enthusiasm when you start, which we want to keep it. And we have this time where you need to learn to wait on the kingdom. It means doing a work and living a life worthy of the call of being called to be a Christian. So, let's consider what we've covered today. The spring of our conversion of becoming a Christian, a time of learning to wait on the kingdom, slow down, to have the patience needed for the long haul, and the summer of our life of a Christian of finding the strength to keep on serving even when you're tired. Now, there's a fall and there's a winter, and we'll cover that on the 27th. I think that's the 7th.